One of the highlights of the Shakespeare Theater Association conference back in January was a reading of this script of yours, Shakespeare in Harlem. But that's the first question I have for you is, wait, is it a script of yours or is it Langston Hughes? Where are the lines drawn? Who did what to whom?
So it's an adaptation.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. I'm Austin Titchener, co-artistic director of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, now in its 19th year, number 984, Shakespeare in Harlem. Gerard Alex Taylor's new play, Shakespeare in Harlem, is having its world premiere this month at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, running from October 30th to November 9th, 2025. Shakespeare in Harlem is an adaptation of the poetry of Langston Hughes and, as you'll hear, Hughes' own adaptation of his own poetry. After seeing the reading of Shakespeare in Harlem back in January, I was thrilled when Gerard zoomed with me to explain the origins of this very cool project.
Langston Hughes published a book of poetry entitled Shakespeare of Harlem. And that would have been maybe in the 40s or so.
Mm-hmm.
And a producer, you know, liked the poetry and wanted him to turn it into a play. So in 1960, Hughes adapted his own book of poetry into a stage play. And now, 100 years later, from the Harlem Renaissance at least, I'm taking that adaptation of an adaptation and adapting it myself for a new audience. So it has much of Langston Hughes's words from his original play, as well as some poetry from other eras of his life, and a character that is not in Hughes's play kind of directly, but I think the sort of thoughts and feelings of the character are expressed throughout the play. So I just brought the character in there. The character is called Simple. And Simple was a pseudonym that Langston Hughes wrote under, where he would take, you know, some of the big themes of the day and publish in an editorial under the name Simple. Oh, well, here's what I think about it, and here's what you should be thinking about it, because it's pretty simple, you know?
The simple view, sure.
Yes, exactly. So I've taken Simple and his cousin Minnie and brought them in as characters into my adaptation. So, you know, there's a girth of Langston Hughes's work. There's also some allusions to Shakespeare.
Yeah.
One thing that pops up often in the play, in my play, is someone will say something like, you know, we're flesh and blood, as they say. And another character will say, well, who says that? And you know, it's a little joke for the Shakespeare scholars coming to see the play, because flesh and blood is a
coinage.
Yes. Yeah. that was coined by Shakespeare. So, you know, there's a bit of Shakespeare in there. I pulled in some speeches from Hamlet, Henry the Sixth, Part Three, if anyone loves that play, different little allusions. And then there is a fair amount of writing that I've added to the play. Just to connect the stories and give a little bit more a world building to the world that Hughes created. Just to give you a little backstory on the Shakespeare in Harlem of 1960, it was not well liked on Broadway.
by a largely white audience, I'm guessing, and largely white critical fraternity.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I have a review of the play that I keep in my office as sort of inspiration. And, you know, it was panned by the critics. I'll say what attracted me to the play is these characters have so much life. I think Langston Hughes was really able to articulate these inner thoughts and feelings of all of the vast range of Black people living in Harlem, going up and down the streets of New York in the 1930s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. Yeah. And it's so palpable. It's so tangible. It's so interesting. And I was very much attracted to it. Yeah. I think it may lack a spine, you know, for those of us that like a story with a nice, neat beginning, middle, and end. I don't know that Langston Hughes' play has that. So, you know, a part of this work is, okay, well, let's just make all of these characters and all of these stories a little bit more cohesive. And also, and this is part of the work I've been doing with the Langston Hughes estate, I reached out to the estate because on their website, they have a mission of bringing Hughes's work to a new generation. Mm-hmm. And so a part of this play, a part of this adaptation process has also been like, okay, well, what parts of Hughes's writing still resonate with us today? And how can we bring in elements of 2025 into this 1960 lens? So I've got a bit of my own poetry in there, a bit of my own, you know, family stories and my own writing in there as well. And I think Langston Hughes, Shakespeare, and Gerard are all collaborating in canonizing the Black experience of the 20th century, at least.
That is all the time we have, ladies and gentlemen. I love it. I ask one question and then I just sit back and let you talk.
Hi, I'm Jeffrey R. Wilson, author of Shakespeare and Trump, Shakespeare and Game of Thrones, and Richard III's Bodies from Medieval England to Modernity, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? This fall of 2025, we're performing All the Great Books Abridged on October 23rd at Pepperdine University in Malibu. Then we'll perform the Ultimate Christmas Show Abridged in Washington State at the Edmonds Center for the Arts on December 3rd, in Olympia on December 4th, and the Capitol Theater in Yakima on December 12th, as well as the Reeser Center in Beaverton, Oregon on December 10th. Sign up for our newsletter or check out the touring page at our website, ReducedShakespeare.com, or our social media pages for venue and ticket information. And now back to my conversation with Gerard Alex Taylor, whose new play, Shakespeare in Harlem, is having its world premiere this month at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, running from October 30th to November 9th, 2025. You know, we talk about, oh, Stephen Sondheim is our modern Shakespeare. Oh, August Wilson is our modern Shakespeare. So I was fascinated. I don't know as much about Langston Hughes as I ought to know. But yes, he was a poet. And in these characters, as you describe them, he is a dramatic poet. Mm-hmm. As well. He's using his poetry in the service of these characters and this world. And it was fascinating not only to hear the reading in San Francisco at the conference, but also to read the part of the script that you sent me. Did Hughes come up with the using the Seven Ages of Man speech as a sort of a template, or is that Taylor?
The Seven Ages of Man speech is in Hughes's original play, but it isn't as much of a focal point as I've sort of made it in my play.
Yeah, cool.
You know, it's a big long speech that somebody says towards the beginning, and we don't quite come back to it. But I looked at that and I said, well, this is what the play is about. He sort of riffs on Jacques's Seven Ages of Man, and he says he says all the world's a stage, and a man's blues has seven ages, and then he goes through the seven ages of a man's blues, specifically a Negro man's blues, right? There's twilight, there's supper time, there's bedtime, there's payday, there's Blue Sunday, and then there's the letter at the end. I think I missed one of them, but
wait, you missed Awakening.
Oh, the Awakening. Yes, thank you.
I'm a student of the text, Mr. Taylor, as you know.
But yeah, I mean, it's interesting because Jacques and Shakespeare takes us through a man's life from birth to death, and Hughes takes us through a man's blues, you know, from just before twilight, just as the sun is going down, to in the end when we make the discovery and we take the stand to write a letter. I think that letter is interesting to me because I've had conversations with the older generation who say, yeah, I'm upset about that. I'm going to write a letter. My grandmother is infamous for writing to city council and getting some changes made in her neighborhood. And I think the act of writing a letter has sort of gone away in our generation.
I'm going to post a strongly worded tweet.
Yeah. But back in the day, you had to pull out some paper and put a stamp on it.
Yeah.
I'm actually, oh, this is funny. I'm reading this book. I can't remember the name of it, but it's anthologies of letters that formerly enslaved African Americans wrote to Abraham Lincoln right after emancipation. And the book starts off with, back in the day, the president was accessible, and you could write him a letter and say, hey, my brother got locked up for being drunk and disorderly, but he's really a good guy. Could you please pardon him? Mm-hmm. And people did this often, and the president had many letters going through their office. And, you know, I think there used to be pride in being able to write a letter, write it to your city councilman or your president or whoever, and know that you were being heard.
I think
it's interesting that Hughes ends the blues of the black man with the letter,
the power of the word. Power of the written word. It's one of the scene that your actors read in San Francisco between the characters of Bruce and Alex was so powerful, and maybe the most with the most direct references to Shakespeare and to language and history and literature. But I was fascinated to discover it's almost right in the center of your play. It's sort of the hinge of your play, and at least in the current draft. I found that fascinating that we build up to this moment and then we come down to it. And Bruce is a character who uses violence as opposed to words. And so to discover the power of words, both spoken and written, is a really incredible journey.
Yeah. That's great that you noticed that. So sometimes I just get to writing and I don't even quite intend for something, and then someone points it out and I'm like, oh, that's brilliant.
Look what I did.
No, but yeah, that does happen, and that's interesting. I don't know what it means, but it's a great little bit of dramaturgy there.
Well, there as was it the Buddha who said there are no mistakes? You know, you slipped and started to call Hughes Shakespeare, and that wasn't a mistake either. And the other lovely thing that I read and so was captured by is that the character of the griot, who is sort of a narrator, at least in the current form a little bit, who also plays multiple characters, calls upon the spirit of the ancestors, calls upon the ancestors, not only our own ancestors, but the spirits of great black heroes and legends and artists, and then calls back to the ancestor of William Shakespeare. And I thought that makes so much sense to me that Shakespeare is one of the ancestors for us all. Yeah. I mean, his plays and his voice have been put to problematic use, God knows, over the last couple hundred years. But I'm such a Pollyanna. I go, oh, but the good news about that is that we share him now, you know. And so I love the use to which you and or Hughes put him to in calling. I mean, I think we're all of us who are working in the theater in a certain way call upon the spirit of William Shakespeare a little bit.
Yeah.
And I love that you called it out.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, so the griot is one of my creations. There is a narrator in Hughes's play. And I kind of wanted to take that character and some other characters, and just give a little bit more of a spiritual space, more of a sacred space within the play. So I started to write this character of the griot. And what I realized is Shakespeare has in many ways transcended just a person, you know? I think it's become a term for good writing, or for writing that touches the heartbeat, right? That iambic pentameter that we come back to so much is the heartbeat, and I think Shakespeare the person knew how to touch that heartbeat in his writing. And I think just the act of Shakespearing to Shakespeare.
I love it's a verb.
I think it has sort of become an act. And the griot comes out and she says, "Well, sure, we know the Shakespeare of the 15 and 1600s, but there's Shakespeare's all over. There are people touching our heartbeat all over. And let me tell you about my Shakespeare. His name is Langston Hughes, right? The Shakespeare of Harlem." Yeah. And she names him, and then we start to learn about, you know, this writing and these characters. But I do think underneath all of that, we've transcended the man Shakespeare, and we're allowing ourselves to engage with the act of Shakespeare, and for me that's really nothing more than touching that heartbeat.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Comedy Podcast, except for one more thing, which I'll share with you in about 60 seconds, so stick around. Gerard Alex Taylor's new play, Shakespeare in Harlem, runs from October 30th to November 9th, 2025, at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, then runs at Chesapeake Shakespeare Company in Baltimore from January 15th to the 18th, 2026. Go to theater.umbc.edu and chesapeakeshakespeare.com for more information. Then send us your nom de plume via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com, or throw a comment to us over on the socials or on our own actual website, reducedshakespeare.com, or visit my website, theshakespeareans.com.
Thanks as always to poet and doesn't realize it Matthew Croak, web services by Ginger Power Limited, and music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout out this week goes to Sue Breland. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to fellow scholar and author Jeffrey Wilson. And as always, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 984 2950 seconds of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
All playwrights have a dream of a future production. Will your dream, Mr. Taylor, be deferred in the words of Mr. Hughes, or are we going to get to see a real production?
No, this dream is already manifesting. So I have to finish up my draft, my current draft, and then that draft will go into production and rehearsals at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, where I am a part of the faculty. Then in January of 2026, the play will travel to Chesapeake Shakespeare Company and will have a Baltimore premiere for Baltimore audiences. It's an important time, I think, to be telling these stories and to be inspiring the next generation to look back and see what history has taught us and perhaps what we can do differently over the next 100 years.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to ReduceShakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.